Hello and welcome to a special edition of the EV Cafe Takeaway. I'm John Curtis and today I'm joined by two giants of the automotive sector to get their take on how the sector's performing. I have the enormous pleasure of welcoming Toby Poston, Director of Corporate Affairs at the BVRLA, the British Vehicle Rental and Leasing Association, and also Edmund EV King, President of the AA. Good morning to you both.
Morning. Good morning.
Now then, how are you, Toby?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Looking forward to a couple of days off down in Devon. So just sort of gearing up for that at the moment.
Because I was going to follow that up with how are you really, but it sounds as though you're demob happy.
Nearly. Got a few meetings this afternoon, but then I'm just heading for that train and looking forward to some R&R.
Good man, train, you've earned it.
Train. Toby, you're not taking the EV to Devon? Come on.
Actually, my wife is. She's heading off a bit earlier, and I'm going to hope to meet en route.
Oh, he's good, you know, isn't he? He's good. Yeah. Answer for everything. Yeah. And Edmund, how are you doing today?
Yeah, no, very well indeed. In sunny Basingstoke, AA headquarters.
You get to all the hot spots. So, Toby, tell us a little bit about the BVRLA for those that don't know and your role within it.
Yeah, so BVRLA is a standard trade association, really, in the automotive space. Our members are those that specialise in vehicle rental, leasing and fleet management. So, if you like, that fleet sector is the slightly underappreciated massive beast that exists within the automotive sector that buys half of all the vehicles that are sold each year. Hundreds and thousands of them running up and down motorways in towns and cities across the UK, but they don't, you know, most of them don't have big logos on the side. But a lot of people are always surprised when I tell them that our members own and operate about 4.5 million cars, vans and trucks. They buy about 50% of all new vehicles sold each year. So obviously as a trade body, we have a big role, both in terms of helping to maintain standards in that industry, helping to keep consumers informed about when they're looking to lease a car, rent a car, use a car club, the best way they can do that. And then we also play a massive role in terms of working with government, campaigning. And as you can imagine, in recent years, there's been a lot of work there around, you know, the decarbonisation agenda, around consumer protection in terms of accessing vehicles and rental. And then also around things like connected cars, clean air zones, you name it. A really, really exciting job. And I basically look after our lobbying, our communications, our research, our events, and also our data services.
Goodness gracious, you've got your hands full. All right, well, we'll be picking at the edge of some of those things in a short while. And Edmund, president of the AA, I think everybody should know what the AA is, but can you tell us who you are, what you do?
Yes, certainly. So I'm president of the AA, but I do have a proper job and I head up our communications and our campaigning and also our AA Charitable Trust, which is a registered charity that does initiatives on road safety and the environment. And of course, the AA, well, everyone knows the AA for Breakdown being the biggest and indeed the best. We've just been awarded a Which Recommended Provider status for the sixth year in a row. No one else has come close to that. And, you know, it really is a true reflection of the dedication of our patrols out there and our contact centre staff and the technology that we've invested in. So, yes, we do Breakdown and we're good at that. But other things, we have a driving school. Last week, we launched a theory test app that's gone down very well to help the driving school, but also things like used cars, AA cars. You can buy used cars online. And also, we work with service maintenance and repair. We have a network of garages. So it's a whole host. What we try and do is fulfill all your motoring needs, whether for fleets or indeed for personal customers.
So it's a massively complex world that you represent for our industry. Toby, let's pick up on some of the things you talked about when you did your introduction. The automotive world, how is it? What's the temperature of it at the moment? Is it a buoyant place to be or are we under a bit of pressure there?
I think there's always a degree of buoyancy in our sector, right? Because it, from my experience, I've been in the industry now for 15 years. People love it. They work in the automotive industry because most of them have a real passion, and it's a fast moving, exciting world to be in. So there's always that undercurrent of no matter how tough things get, people are working in the industry they love. But I think it's fair to say that, you know, as in a lot of industries, people in our sector have just literally been bounced from, you know, one bit of uncertainty to another, and there's so much change going on. So whether it's dealing with COVID and all the supply issues that created, they're also dealing with the you know, probably an unprecedented amount of technological change that is continuing to sort of hit our industry, whether it's decarbonisation, connectivity, shared use of vehicles, government just getting more and more involved in terms of the policy agenda and sort of tweaking stuff either on a local level or a national level. To try and have more of a say in what we drive, where we drive it, how we drive it. And then also now we've got sort of quite a lot of changes going in from the supply side in terms of OEM strategies, in terms of their product, how those vehicles are sold and distributed and looked after. So, and then if you had an undercurrent or a background of the world economy, macroeconomic issues, supply of, you know, raw materials, it's just an absolute tumble dryer of uncertainty and sort of continual challenges. But I love the way that members approach that and the industry approaches that. We're seeing an unprecedented amount of collaboration now where, you know, that's really changed in the last 10 years, where you're getting OEMs working with finance companies, working with supply chain, tier one, tier two suppliers. Technology is really coming in. Fintech is coming in. Then we've got the whole new world of energy and charging companies and energy providers who are also jumping in. So it's just really, really exciting, really, really fast. You have to accept that there are some days when you don't know what the hell's going on, and others when it just magically seems to come together. And it's a bit of a roller coaster, if I'm honest, but it's an amazing ride.
And I suppose that ever-changing tumble dryer of things going on is very much part of what you both do in terms of lobbying government, helping them to understand the reality of the world that we live in. Edmund, we've seen some big announcements just recently around Arrival, Volta Trucks, Teva. You know, there's been moves out of the country. There's been administration. We've had VW even halting production of the ID3 for a couple of weeks. It is a challenging environment. Do you find that government are receptive to your input on that, or do they not want to hear what's really going on?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed issue, a mixed reception. I think they realise there are problems, but finding the solutions is a lot more difficult. You know, Toby addressed a lot of the issues. You know, I could add a few more, you know, skill shortages, Brexit, general election with more uncertainty, you know, so there is that real kind of mishmash. And we do get mixed messages. You know, if you look at 2030, you know, we were constantly told by the transport secretary, personally, I was told about three times, none of the OEMs are knocking on my door asking us to change the date. And then the date changes. So, you know, that, of course, leads to uncertainty. The industry were planning for 2030. The OEMs were planning for 2030. And then the government changes it. So, yes, there were political pressures and wider pressures, which is in itself really quite interesting, because there is no doubt that in the last probably 8 months, that there has been a lot of misinformation, for example, about EVs, and it has had cut through. There is no doubt at all. We survey our members every month, so individual consumers rather than Toby's members, who are the fleets, who are, you know, probably more sophisticated in terms of those views. And there is no doubt the acceptance of zero emission vehicles, EV vehicles, has dropped off quite considerably in the last 8 months. And it is that misinformation, you know, when people hear about, I don't know, EV fires or lack of charging infrastructure, that does cut through to the consumers. So it was probably no surprise that 72% of AA members said that they were broadly approved the change from 2030 to 2035. And in a way, you can't really blame them because of the information they're then being given, whereas industry was much more divided, you know, some very much in support of 2030 and it giving clarity, you know, some opting more for 2035. So it's a mixed picture. Government listens on some things, but it's still quite a fight. You have to push it pretty hard.
And how do you find the trade has responded, Toby, to that pushback to 2035? Has it just said, you know, we've just got to get on with it? Because lead times for new vehicles are incredibly long from design to delivery. So presumably it's not had a massive impact in terms of volumes of product being generated and brought to market.
So we have a wonderfully diverse membership. And as a result, I think we're going to have, well, I know from conversations that we've got some members that felt a bit relieved that maybe on some of those sectors that are struggling a bit more on the rental sector, daily rental sector, on the sort of consumer finance side, who felt actually the market, you know, that 2030 was beginning to look a bit scary in terms of getting that degree of phase out that they were being asked to. And then you had another part that's going great guns, as we know, the fleet sector, the company car sector, the salary sacrifice sector, who are way ahead of any trajectory towards decarbonisation. They were frustrated because they felt like, you know, the goalposts had been moved. So it was a mixture of frustration and relief. But I think you're right. I think in essence, this was a PR stunt. It's definitely knocked retail sentiment. I've also heard that EV demand from the retail sector is down. But in terms of the background plans of the OEMs and the large fleets, I don't really think it's hit anything because the key driver there is the ZEV, the zero emission vehicle mandate, which, if you like, is the enabling framework, the mechanism that is going to get the right supply of electric vehicles coming into the UK between now and 2035. So to a large degree, it's business as normal for the industry, but the confidence has been knocked. And I think the main problem for me is just confidence in the government doing what it says it's going to do. That's, you know, a lot of my members are not going to trust the government as much when they come out with future roadmaps. And that is damaging.
Yes. Interesting, Toby, because the zero emission mandate is what governs the OEMs, isn't it? And it still says 80% of your cars and 70% of your vans should be zero emission by 2030. You know, so even if you've moved the 100% zero emission or get rid of hybrids, but from 2030 to 2035, in the overall scheme of things for the industry, it doesn't make that much difference. So, it was political positioning, I think.
What I wonder is whether we will see OEMs and dealerships having to almost discount zero emission vehicles on the basis that if you sell more internal combustion engine vehicles, you'll be paying a £15,000 fine for each one that you sell. And so the logic is that you reduce the price of the electric vehicles to clear them through. Does that make any sense, Toby, or is that just suicide?
It's already happening. Yeah, it's already happening, where I think very soon we will see discounts for electric vehicles more than you get for petrol and diesel. Members already reporting that. I've seen some auto trader figures as well saying that is really hitting the market already. Obviously, it varies between make and model, but it's here.
And I guess maybe a little outside of the scope of this, but certainly in your wheelhouse, is that without an integrated transport strategy for the UK, all the movement to electric vehicles will not change the amount of congestion that we have on our roads. And that's another issue which government has yet to tackle. Edmund, presumably you're representing drivers, and so it's a difficult balance to effect. Well, that you have this dichotomy, if you like, representing drivers, but recognising that actually drivers are part of the problem.
Well, it's really, really interesting. We got some new stats, you know, hot off the press, and we asked members about broader transport strategy and what should be the priorities. And, you know, surprise, surprise, not. Number one, potholes, road maintenance, you know, 96%. So that should be the absolute priority. And, you know, it should, for so many reasons. For us, it causes breakdowns, but more importantly, for people on two wheels, you know, it can cause fatality. So potholes was there. But perhaps the surprising thing from drivers, that the number two public policy they'd like to see was 84% more investment in public transport. Mm. And I, you know, I thought that figure was really quite high, you know, coming from drivers. So, you know, I think there is a message. Drivers don't drive all the time. You know, many drivers cycle, they all walk, and many do use public transport, particularly in our towns and cities. And it's always about getting that balance. And yes, you can have 35 million zero emission cars, but if they're all going to the same place at the same time, it will cause massive congestion. So we still do need that broader transport policy, you know, particularly in our towns and cities, but also looking at some of the interurban routes. But obviously, you know, a lot of politics comes into that, as we've seen recently with HS2 and kind of positioning from the opposition parties, and it still remains to be seen what will be the fundamental transport policy for the UK.
Toby, I guess you have a modelling process for the impacts of certain government policies as they come along and what that will do to the industry?
Yeah, we try. I mean, modelling is very expensive and a difficult time-consuming task, so we don't do it for everything, because certainly with the, you know, the amount of rumour and speculation around government policy, you could spend a lot of money modelling a lot of things that never came to pass. But on the topic of sort of shared mobility and this whole idea of a more sustainable approach to personal car use, it's been on the agenda for a while. Probably in London is sort of 10, 12, 15 years ahead of the rest of the UK. And even if you look at the pace of change in London, it's been really slow, just because it's such on a local level, and government increasingly likes to devolve this stuff because they know it's so unpopular or so fractious with different groups of resident in local areas. They always devolve it to local authorities. It's just a really, really difficult one, because you start interfering with things like ability to park outside your house. You know, we saw what terrible issues the LTNs caused in London. So yes, we know for a fact that government sees congestion as the number one issue after decarbonisation, and that will probably balance out and even go ahead of decarbonisation as we hit the phase out. But it's going to be devolved, and that ultimately comes down to money and resource at a local level. So some of the bigger urban authorities like Manchester, Birmingham can maybe take a more structured approach, have the resource to look at it, but I think it's going to be slow. And ultimately, you know, will councillors want to vote for this stuff? Will they want to be the councillor that's seen as the one that's removing all the parking spaces outside of their voters' houses, or that is, you know, restricting transport in another way? And then the other point is, are they willing to also invest enough in local public transport? Because that's the quid pro quo. We have a world leading public transport, I would say, in London. That diminishes as you go across the UK, unfortunately. So that's another problem.
I suppose with devolution of responsibilities down to local authorities, that makes your job even harder, in that you have a direct line at the moment to the policymakers and those who are able to make decisions, right, wrong or indifferent, so that at least you know who to go after. I mean, Edmund, you've been very, very involved in smart motorways and how they have caused untold problems for drivers and indeed fatalities. Having that central focus for policy, is that a good thing or a bad thing, do you think, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, it does cause difficulties, because if you have, for example, different low emission zones in London, Birmingham, Bristol, Manchester, even for the AA as a company with our vehicles, you know, what is the criteria for entering Birmingham? You know, is it Euro 6? Is it zero emissions? Is it? And just the complexity for any business, and you know, Toby's even more so, because represents numerous fleets. And so what we always say to central government, you know, yes, you can devolve, but you need some certain standard guidelines and regulations that should be followed. And that comes all the way down to parking controls, moving offences, you know, at the lower level. Because we don't all just live in one region. We don't all just travel in one region. You know, business travels across the UK and it needs to know. So, you know, whereas devolution is good on a number of levels, it's good for local democracy, but you still need some standardisation. And I think that has fallen down somewhat probably in the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm. Right. Okay. Enough of this negative chat. Let's talk about some positive. Toby, give me some positive. What are the biggest opportunities, do you think, for drivers and businesses that are coming over the next 10 to 15 years?
I think that there's a number of them, right? So I think some big things we're going to see in the future. I'm really excited about the increasing connectivity we're getting into vehicle fleets, right? So I think next year is going to be a bit of a cut through year. We're seeing more and more vehicle manufacturers now are making the data that's available from vehicles more widely available and at an affordable price. And I think that is going to lead to massive opportunities to cut the costs of motoring and also improve road safety, particularly around things like maintenance, proactive maintenance of vehicles, understanding how vehicles are being driven. If you've got a big fleet or rental company and someone's driving your vehicle in a sort of unsafe way, you'll be able to get real-time information and track that at a macro level so that you can intervene if necessary, both in terms of rewarding good drivers or ensuring that, you know, the people who aren't driving properly know why that is and get sort of have a chat with them. So I think that data and that intelligence, that insight is going to drive safer, more cost-effective transport, which is a really good thing. I also think that the decarbonisation piece is going to accelerate. I think we're heading for an interesting couple of years, but I think long term, I think come the end of this decade, that's just going to be, you know, all those problems are going to be hopefully behind us. I think the charging infrastructure is a much maligned area. But I think there's some real progress happening there. I think the advent of the Chinese manufacturers will be a good thing. So I think, we're going to see a much wider breadth of vehicles for all use cases coming in. So I think, long term, it's a good thing. I think as well, we do hear a lot of negative, maybe not negative, but we hear a lot of people almost forecasting the end of sort of private motoring, that people are falling out of love with it. I don't see that. Again, Edmund can probably come in with some more accurate data, but all the surveys I see say that people still see motoring as something they really enjoy. They need it to get around. They love the freedom and independence. They feel quite often they can't rely on public transport. And they just enjoy it. And I think that is not going to change. All the EVs I've driven are even more enjoyable to drive in some ways. Maybe the old petrol heads would say, you know, you never replace the feeling of a nice gear stick and that throb of the engine. But most of the people who aren't petrol heads that I speak to just love the joy of electric motoring. It's less stressful, really responsive. I think there's a lot of things to be positive about.
And I've got to ask you, Toby, what are you driving?
I never was a petrol head. I was never really, I've had probably 4 or 5 company cars. You would have a company car working for the BVRLA, right, in my time. And I've always been, I've had a different brand every time, and I've never really felt an allegiance. But do you know what? I've got a Skoda now, and this Skoda, I've had it for a year, I've had it on an Enyaq, and I really like it. I feel like it actually... there's a bit of a connection there, you know, I'm loving my Skoda. Obviously, I'm always interested in what's coming next. That's the lucky thing about having a company car, where you get to get a new vehicle and you get to see what the new technology is and the new big thing. But at the moment, I can't see beyond, you know, another Skoda. I think it's doing the job for me.
And isn't that an incredible thing that certainly in Edmund's and my lifetime, because I suspect we're a little older than you, Toby, Skoda has gone from being the laughing stock of the motoring world to a real badge of quality. And I guess that does give us hope, doesn't it, that our industry, whilst it's going through some difficult times, can and should improve, be better, be more responsive and change the way that, that our society works. It shouldn't be a problem. It should be a freedom. It should be a way in which we engage better with the world that we live in. Edmund, what do you think that the biggest driver of change is going to be? Is it going to be investment? Is it going to be new technology that Toby talks about? Is it the customer that will drive change? What do you think?
Yeah, I think the automotive world is changing a lot, and Toby kind of alluded to it. You know, even things like brand loyalty, you know, people don't just buy BMWs or Mercedes time after time. You know, we've got these new incumbents that have come in. And I think electrification has helped to break down some of those barriers. So, you know, people who may have bought a BMW might buy a Kia EV6 or a Genesis V70 Sport electrified, etc. So you've got these other brands that are actually classy cars. And for me, that is the optimism for the future, because, you know, I was a petrol head. You know, I was brought up living next door but one to Colin Chapman of Lotus Cars, and you know, I had MGs and I had a 911 and, you know, some supercars, Alfa Romeo, GT, GTV, etc. And I loved those cars. And if you'd asked me, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago about electric vehicles, frankly, it was quite boring. You know, they did the job, they got around, but they weren't very exciting. Whereas you ask me today, and, you know, I was driving a Genesis last week. Fantastic car. Great to drive. And as Toby was saying, the technology on these cars does make it much safer. You know, the head-up displays, the automatic braking, the lane control, all of this. So I do think as that technology drops down, and you know, Toby's customers do a great job here buying more than 50% of the new vehicles, which is great because it means that new technology, those safer cars come onto the used car market more quickly, and then more people can benefit from that safety technology. So I think that is great. And also the kind of connected car, it's something the AA is looking at. We're investing millions of pounds in connected car because it can help us help our customers. If we can predict and prevent breakdowns, no one wants to break down on the side of the M4, particularly if there isn't a hard shoulder because it's a smart motorway. No one wants to do that. So if we can reduce the likelihood of you breaking down to start with, that is a good thing. So I think, you know, despite the political uncertainty that we've seen over the last few years, I think technologically we're beginning to get things right. And I think actually in automotive, it is a very, very exciting future.
Absolutely. So let's look at the future just very briefly to wind up. If you could change one thing, and Toby, I'll address this to you first. If you could change one thing with a wave of a magic wand in our industry, what would you change for the better?
So I'm gonna be like a typical campaigner and sneak two in, all right? So this is what I always do. So you give me one option, I take two. If you give me two, I take three. So number one, back to that piece around, you know, government trying to intervene, particularly in urban areas, and trying to make sort of motoring harder for people because they're trying to reduce congestion. That's fine. But I think if you're trying to make private car use horrible in urban areas, which is frankly what's happening in some areas, you need to provide alternatives. You know, it's not fair to sort of hit someone with a massive stick in one area and sort of not present an escape route where they can go and rely on public transport or shared car use. So that would be the one thing. You've got to time that or manage it effectively. And that's going to involve money. So government needs to invest in public transport. They need to invest in some other sort of innovative ideas of sort of encouraging people to use these mobility as a service apps as well. So that's number one. The second one is just, again, back to that point around this tumble dryer. We need a bit of certainty. And the key area we need certainty now, and it's getting more and more imperative, is on the future of the motoring tax regime. You know, 26, 30 billion pounds a year comes in from a combination of fuel duty and other motoring related emissions related motoring taxes, and this number is decreasing rapidly as we make that shift to electric motoring, And we just need to tell people it's only right if you're choosing electric motoring that you know what your future tax burden is going to be and how you're going to be doing it, because it's an important part of that cost of ownership piece, particularly for fleets that tend to try and think rationally about what's the cost of this vehicle going to be over 3, 4, 5, 6 years. So we really need someone to seize the metal, bite the bullet, and come out with how that's going to look. We know why they're not doing it. It's the same reason that local politicians don't like introducing congestion measures. You know, no one wants to be the minister that introduced a new tax. You know, we can all think about the poll tax, and in the past, whenever people have talked about road pricing, you know, it's been, oh, the Daily Mail piles in. But actually, I think sentiment's changed. Eben might have some recent polling on this, but a lot of the recent polls I've seen show that people just know it's inevitable now. They can see the writing's on the wall for fuel duty, and they just want clarity. So, again, bit of money invested in public transport and alternative shared car use, and then, you know, let's just design a future tax regime that will enable us to continue driving and adopting electric vehicles, but in a fair way that doesn't add a load more tax on there. I don't want to see electric vehicle drivers in 10 years paying 40, 50 billion. You know, it should be the same as we do now.
Well, I'm pretty sure that magic wand sits in your hands with the job that you do, and you may well be able to influence that. Edmund, what about you? What would you wish to see with the wave of your wand?
I think for me, I don't want people to get left behind. And you know, levelling up is an overused political cliche. But, you know, when it comes to electric vehicles, we're not on an even playing field. And, you know, of course, it's great if you can get a company car, you can get salary sacrificed, if you've got your own off-street parking, that is great. But many people don't have that, and I don't think they should be left behind. So I think we do need more incentives, but, you know, imaginative incentives around used cars and used cars on salary sacrifice and opening that up, and grants that are targeted to people. We also need to look at insurance. Insurance is a big, big issue at the moment. And frankly, it is pricing many drivers, not just EV drivers, but many drivers. It's actually pricing them off the road. So don't forget other people. Level up. Get whatever government's in power to look at that to ensure that everyone has the same opportunities.
Well said. Well said.
I don't know about you. I feel that with you two in the driving seat and helping to inform the government that we have, whatever colour that may be, that we'll at least get that message through to government. Whether they listen or not is outside of your control, but I'm heartened by what I've heard today. So, Toby, bless you. Thank you kindly. Edmund, I didn't ask you, what are you driving these days?
Well, yeah, I'm driving quite a nice car at the moment. I'm driving a Porsche Taycan that I've got to say isn't only the best electric car, it's probably one of the best cars. It is a joy to drive. So, yeah, I'm very lucky with that.
Yeah, I think we're all blessed. We're all blessed because we work in an industry where we are seeing growth, we are seeing change, and we're seeing people make the difference. You two are fabulous. Thank you so, so much for joining the EV Cafe Takeaway today. If you want to follow our podcast, then please do. You can at evcafe.org. But for now, Toby Poston from the BVRLA, Edmund King from the AA, bless your hearts. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.